Welcome back to Weekly Winners. This is our second episode, and the Bucks, we're recording Sunday morning, Saturday night. Bucks took it up 3-2, won the game in Phoenix, taking it back home on Tuesday, Bucks in six. The prophecy is coming true. I saw a very funny tweet scrolling through last night. I wish I could shout them out. I don't remember who it was, but they said, if the Bucks win in six, Brendan Jennings gets a trophy and a statue outside Pfizer Forum. No questions asked. the originator of Bucks in six. But for real, the first time in the series, maybe in the playoffs. No, that's not true. They did it against the Hawks. But Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton showing up at the same game on the road, no less. Both Jrue and Chris had problems previously coming through on the road, and they did it. The big four combining to score 102 points, that of course being Giannis, Middleton, Holiday, and Pat Connaughton.
Yeah, I guess my big takeaway from the game, it was great to see, you know, the big three finally all showing up in the same game.
Right.
You know, like you've had Middleton drop 40 mm-hmm. this series, but Jrue didn't show up. You know, it was great to see all three of them finally show up.
Yeah. I told you a little bit about this last night, how the NBA guard defense especially is so hard to quantify now, because anyone who used their eyes and watched this basketball game last night would come away saying Jrue Holiday played quite the defensive game. He was a big reason why they won. He had some great possessions on both Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And then you open up the box score, and you're like, oh, Chris Paul had 21 and Devin Booker scored 40 again. And you would never be like, oh, yeah, of course that wasn't like a great defensive game from Jrue Holiday. But it's just the fact that great offense is going to beat out great offense these days in the NBA. And he still deserves all the props in the world for the defense he played, the steals he got. He had three steals and a block on the game. He was pretty much the reason why we won this game. Obviously, Giannis did Giannis. It's crazy to gloss over a 32-9-6 game in the finals. But it's just what's expected of him these days, right, which is crazy. This was the night. It's been happening over the series, but I think this is the night where all of Wisconsin really fell in love with Pat Connaughton. 4 of 6 from threes. He only took threes. 14 points. Really showed up for them. I told another friend of ours that there's points in this series where the Bucks have been put in position several times where it's like, we need a star to step up. And it's been Pat Connaughton more than once.
Right.
When that's a spot where usually would expect Giannis or Middleton to have to do something big, hit a big shot, get a big rebound, get a defensive stop. And Pat Connaughton just says, you know what? I'm not scared of the moment. I'm going to step up and do it. We've seen it from before. He wasn't scared of the moment in the Hawks series when he airballed that three, but he's been really good this series. He's probably earned a contract for pretty much life in Milwaukee if he wants it. I'm very hyped for game six.
We're going to be there
down to the Deer District on Tuesday, hopefully to see him close it out.
Right. And I mean, the big takeaway from this playoffs for me has just been like, you know, resilience. Mm-hmm. I mean, they go down 0-2 to the Nets, win the series, right. Down 0-2 to the Suns. Now they're up 3-2. It's like, just showing resilience, I guess, because especially in the Nets series, they did it without Giannis for some games, you know?
Right. Yeah. That,
or no, that was the Hawks.
The Hawks series. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that first quarter though, in this game, it's reflected. You take a look at the box score afterwards, Giannis -7 in the minutes he was out there. And I look at that, I'm like, minus seven. Like, well, it was that first quarter. Right. The Bucks went down like 18-36 at some point in the second. And it's like, yeah, that's where all that came back. When Giannis went out, is they started to claw back a little bit.
Right. I mean, Drew dropped what? It was like 14 or 16 in the second quarter.
Right. The second quarter was Drew's quarter. Third quarter was Middleton's, as he's tend to do. He just comes out of halftime and wins those third quarters for us, which has been so clutch throughout the playoffs. And then the fourth quarter, they all just kind of came together, save for that, you know, 3 minute stretch from 5 to 2 minutes left. They really looked like a dominant team playing all together in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Booker turning in another 40. We got to mention it. He is maybe outside of maybe anyone on the Bucks or maybe Kevin Durant, probably the player who's had their stock rise the most in this playoffs. People see him as a legitimate superstar now, and that's undeniable when you're turning out multiple 40-point performances during the finals.
Right. I mean, I was happy for him when they brought in Chris Paul, get him, you know, just get him a little help. Mm-hmm. Always been a fan of him, but he just never really had a team around him.
Right. It's so weird to – there's all those guys who are like – you like them and you'll cheer for them because they're like on a bad team or they're in a bad situation or something. And then all of a sudden, especially with the Suns, out of nowhere, they're contenders. And it's like,
right.
Oh, you're playing the Suns in the finals. Like, do you hate the Suns fans? Like I've never had to consider Suns fans. I don't think I've ever met a Suns fan until right. the series. And it's like, with the finals, how intense it is. I watched those games in Phoenix and they take the 8K Super HD cameras on those Phoenix fans. I hate every single one of them.
Right.
And I'm sure they feel the same every time they see all of us idiots in the Deer District jumping around every time the Bucks do something. But yeah,
right.
Something will always kind of grow when between teams in this intense of a series. Looking now, when it comes back to Milwaukee, the Bucks are going to open up as 5-point favorites, which feels right. It's kind of been around 5 for the home team in every game of this series, yeah. Outside of the first game, because we knew Giannis was a kind of a question mark. -210 to win in Milwaukee. Very exciting. Giannis has skyrocketed up to -400 MVP odds. Bucks are -400. To win the championship over the next.
What's week. Middleton at for MVP odds?
+2,000. He has the stats, but
right.
it's just going to be Giannis.
Right. He's my MVP,
right.
Middleton. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah, no, yeah, Giannis, I would feel bad if Giannis didn't get it.
Right.
But I saw some conversation going on, which I really liked this and won't need to do a full dive on it, but people talking about, you know, there's always like the GOAT conversation, like who's the greatest. And I saw this one guy claiming like, that's a flawed argument. There's GOAT, G-O-H-T, greatest of his time. And he kind of went through and said, oh, Wilt was the GOAT. And then he passed it to this guy and this guy and this guy, how it goes down the line. I don't want to get too ahead of myself. But if a player were to go unanimous MVP, MVP and Defensive Player of the Year, and then finals and finals MVP, how could anyone argue that he's not the greatest player in the league at
right.
the current time? Good. And not trying to jinx anything, but.
Right. I love the greatest of his time because, like, I hate the MJ LeBron debate.
Right.
Absolutely hate it. Well, two way different styles of basketball.
It is. That I mean, that one's stomachable in comparison to when someone's like, you're trying to argue how good Tim Duncan is. I'm like, well, what about Bill Russell? It's like, what do you mean? Like, how right. am I ever supposed to compare to these two? Yeah, right. Maybe we'll do a deeper dive on that when we have a slower day in the off season. But let's roll into some of the picks we made over the weekend. If you're looking for our picks, we're betting on baseball right now, kind of a little thing to bet on. We tweet out our picks and results every day on Twitter at Weekly Winners WI for Wisconsin. That's Weekly Winners WI. Same username also on Instagram and TikTok if you want to follow our socials. We talked about on the last pod how Friday we were going to jump in, or I was going to jump in for my first day betting on baseball now that basketball is all but wrapped up. We said we're both going to take five picks. I want to see who comes out on top. Quick rundown. We both bet the Rays plus 107 against the Braves. That hit. We both bet the White Sox plus 118 against the Astros. That did not. I also won on the Mariners plus 140 over the Angels and lost on the unders in both the Rangers Blue Jays and Dodgers Rockies games. I got back from work just in time to turn on the Blue Jays Rangers game. I had under 9.5. It was this bottom of the sixth. The Blue Jays were up. It was 6-0. I was like, all right, you know, just got to get through the sixth, seventh, and eighth. Blue Jays are at home. They won't bat the ninth. The Rangers are clearly not going to contribute to this total. And then within a couple of minutes, the Blue Jays score five runs on two pitches. Back-to-back, Vlad hitting the second home run of the game. So I'm like, well, I enjoyed my 5 minutes of watching this game. And then the Dodgers-Rockies under I also lost on. So I was 2-3 on the day, minus about a half a unit. Not great. I'll take it for my first day. I'm not digging myself a major hole. Your Friday, your initial five you threw out there, obviously you had the Rays and White Sox, which we both had. You hit Cubs minus 1.5 over the Diamondbacks, Phillies money line against the Marlins, and the Blue Jays minus 2.5 against the Rangers. And then you saw that Rangers money line plus 210. And you said, let me sprinkle a little. Let me hedge a little bit. So what was your thought process, and what is your thought process when you get those baseball money lines over 200?
So I guess I was just looking at the lines, right? Mm-hmm. And I see the Rangers to cover 1.5 was like minus 110 or 120 or something. Mm-hmm. So I look at that as, you know, that's the bookies saying, okay, more likely than not, it's a one run game, right? So as a little hedge, I didn't do a full unit on that. You know, I would sprinkle just enough to recoup my one unit on the Blue Jays minus 2.5. Just because when you have a bookie saying, hey, more likely than not, this is going to be the Rangers will keep it within a run, and then they give you more than plus 200 on the money line, I really just view that as a value bet.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like 200 right. lines are pretty rare in baseball. It's just
right. anything you maybe can happen. You maybe get one a night, if yeah, that.
That's
and when you accurate. Do, when you do, it's like usually a really bad team, you know, against like the Dodgers or something. And that was kind of the scenario. The Blue Jays are clearly better than the Rangers, mm-hmm. but I figured I'd sprinkle just enough on the to essentially cover my Blue Jays, because I took an alternate line. The Blue Jays were minus 1.5.
Right. Everyone's minus 1.5 or plus 1.5 at this point.
Yeah.
But a great day on Friday for you. Hit four bets, every single one of them plus odds. So 4-2, plus 3.5 units. Pretty good cushion to start out for when we're tracking our bets. So we roll into Saturday, which was kind of the day defined by games not being played rather than being played.
This entire weekend in baseball has just kind of been weird. I mean, you have a doubleheader on Friday, Saturday, and now today, Sunday, because of the game postponed yesterday,
right.
the Blue Jays game. Yeah, just kind of a weird weekend. Lots of doubleheaders, lots of postponed games, just weird.
Yeah, I bet four games personally. I had the Orioles-Royals over. That hit. I had the Tigers over the Twins. I bet that second game of that doubleheader, the Tigers won both. So that cashed for me. I had the Blue Jays-Rangers. So that postponed. And I had the Marlins plus 100 on the money line against the Phillies. That rained out in the 10th. I believe it's 2-2. And that will start up again at like 1:30 today. So that will go. I'll find out that result in a matter of hours. But so far on Saturday, I am 2-0 plus 1.97 units. Your Saturday, you also had a game
rough
postponed. You had the Nationals minus 1.5 on that alternate line. That game will also – are they playing today or are they waiting still?
Yeah, I believe at 107 Central
Time. Okay, they're starting both those postponed games early. Nationals are down in that one, so that's not looking great.
Yeah, they're down 4 in like the 7th or something, 8th.
Mm-hmm. You missed on you bet a lot of alternate lines on Saturday. So I do want to ask you kind of what your thought process is when you look for those. But to roll through the rest of them, you went Giants minus 2.5 against the Cardinals. That missed. The Diamondbacks, you took the money line against the Cubs. That missed. But the Braves, you went to minus 1.5 against the Rays. You've kind of flipped that line. I believe the Rays were 1.5 favorites. Yep. So that hits, so that cashes 163. So without counting any of the postponed games, that brings you to 5-5 on the season so far. But because of your betting pretty much only positive lines, you're still up over 3 units, which is just the advantage of that. I go to 4-3 plus 1.5, better than I thought it'd be when I started setting up baseball. So, you know, plus almost 5 units as a show, I can definitely live with that through 2 days of betting. But yeah,
right.
Like, what do you look for when you are moving lines?
So I take a very, like, I mean, for any of you Moneyball fans, like sabermetric, you know, Bill James, Billy Bean, like very analytical approach to baseball betting, because there's just way more analytics in baseball than any other sport. I mean, you know, a guy steps up to the plate and every position player moves.
Right.
You know, you might have an entire half of a field with just no one on it, because statistically he'll hit the ball to the left side of the field 95% of the time.
Right.
So baseball is just a lot more of an analytical sport, in my opinion. So really what I do, I look at, you know, let's look at the Giants and Cardinals game, right? I took the Giants, I took an alternate line at minus 2.5. So the first thing I'll do is I'll look at, you know, the Giants starting nine, their career averages versus the Cardinals starting pitcher, and then vice versa, because career averages and OBP, because you got to get on base to score runs. That's how I look at it. And, you know, maybe you have a rookie pitcher, you know, or just a really small sample size if you're looking like AL, NL teams. So if it's too small of a sample size, I'll just go to like right, left batting splits, home away batting splits, you know, just it's really just all an analytical approach. And that's, I guess, how you can. Like Braves minus 1.5 versus the Rays. Rays were heavy favorites. The Braves pitching has struggled all season. And so I just feel like taking that analytical approach, you can, I mean, yeah, if you look at my season 7-5, so hypothetically, you know, if I was taking even lines, I'd be even right now. But taking that analytical approach, even though I'm 5-5, I can still be up 3 units after 2 days of betting.
Right. So it's very available stats and very applicable. It's just that extra effort that you're putting in to look up those stats, where your average Joe like me, who goes to the sports book and sees the line and looks at like the pitching matchup, isn't putting in that little bit of extra effort to really go in and be like, oh, so I can see this guy's ERA, but like, what about against these specific players?
Right. And that's the thing. Like I say, a lot of times you'll have just too small of a sample size. And then for playoffs, I'll even go deeper. I'll try to find out like the projected relievers mm-hmm. as well. And then I'll do a rundown. And yeah, it's really just diving into the stats, because baseball is a simple game of you get on base more, you're going to score more. And when you dive in, I guess you can just kind of project, I guess, how like projects which team will be able to score more runs.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I try to only take plus odds in baseball. Mainly because when I'm taking alternate lines, I'm probably going to lose more
naturally
than I'd like. But taking those, I mean, yesterday I had plus 200, plus 195, plus 163, and plus 122. So it's like, even if I split those games, I'm still coming out ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I'm the perfect baseline, the measuring stick for you to go against the more traditional bettor who is taking some of those over-unders in very less money lines, more spreads. And I'm 4-3. I've won more than I've lost. You've gone dead even, and you've made more than double the units that I have.
Right. And I mean, I don't think one is necessarily better than the other. You know, it's all personal. It's all what works for you. Yeah, I've got, I know for today's games, I took all alternate lines and one alternate over under.
That's what I was wondering, if you were going to stick with it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It could be tough to see those bets come up red, but when it's like, yeah, well, it was plus 200. If one of those hits, my day completely turns around and I'm up a unit and a half rather than down a half unit.
Right. And it's not like I'm just like throwing a dart and saying, okay, this is the bet I'm choosing. You know, like there is analytics behind it. So it's not like I'm just taking a 50-50 shot of, oh, is this plus 200 going to hit, you know? So I guess I can run through my picks for today then.
Yeah, roll into them. So yeah, today, Sunday, the 18th, these will be our picks. By the time you guys are hearing this, obviously these games will be decided. Baseball lines aren't available that much in advance, but if you're listening to this on Monday when it's dropping and you want the picks for that day, just go to our Twitter. They'll be there. And yeah, we're trying to put them out every day.
Yep. And the Twitter, just again, is Weekly Winners WI.
Correct. That's all our socials.
Yep. So I'm going to start. I believe the original over-under on the Rays and Braves game today was 8.5. Mm-hmm. I bumped that up to 9.5 and took the over at plus 118. Okay. Again, just pitching matchups and splits for both teams. It seemed like not a guarantee, but a pretty solid bet there. I actually didn't move the line on one game. That's the Red Sox and Yankees. Mm-hmm. I got the Red Sox money line there at plus 102. Next, we're rolling into the Indians at the Athletics. Took an alternate line of Athletics minus 2.5 at plus 170. And then for my final bet, I got the Padres at the Nationals. I know last night didn't go so well for the Nationals, but I'm taking them again at an alternate line of minus 1.5 at plus 175.
Hey, maybe the Nationals really surprise you and make you a double winner today.
Right.
That bet rolling over. Although I will give you credit. I definitely could have not sat there and listened to me roll through my picks and just blow past Oh, Diamondbacks plus 122 versus the Cubs. That'll mess. Oh.
Yeah, that, you know, we were talking about doing a bad beats segment, you know, every episode. And we were like, well, how often do you have like really bad beats?
Right. We'll wait for them to come organically. Hopefully the segment never comes up. And the next day.
Yeah. So yesterday, the Diamondbacks, they were up 2-1. They were the home team. So the Cubs were batting in the top of the ninth. Two outs, nobody on base, and the Cubs go on to score three runs. Nice little two-out rally in the top of the ninth. Diamondbacks go, I believe it went walk, out, 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 and that was your game. Just about cried when I saw that. Yeah. But
were you watching, or were you just like, oh, this is 2-1, one out left?
I was at work, so I was following. Just like checking updates, but
that's brutal, especially when there's like, it's just a number on a screen. You don't like have the context of like, right. What happened? Like what?
Right. You get the alert for the mound visit. And then 2 seconds later you get an alert. Oh, they just, you know, scored two runs because the alerts just come so delayed. And I'm like,
right.
But yeah, so, that was brutal.
I'll roll into my picks for today. I'm rolling Brewers minus 125 to finish off the Reds, sweep the series. Burns is pitching today. He has been great all season. Brewers pitching staff has just been outstanding this season. I'm going to ride with the Brewers to close out this series. The Reds have just been – obviously, it went in the extras last night, but the Reds have just been sloppy this series. I've watched – parts of both games and just errors, passed balls. There's that play in the first game of the series where there's the passed ball behind the catcher and it goes out of play and there's this big dispute. The managers come out, they end up saying it was out of play. They send the guy back to third from scoring. And the very next pitch, he throws it right past the catcher again. And the catcher scores from third anyway. I believe in the Brewers to close it out here. I'm also going with the Twins and Tigers. I'm going under 10 runs for an even plus 100. They have decent pitchers rolling out there today, and they finished some very low scoring games yesterday. Neither team really has the bats working. 10 seems high, especially for an even line for guys that really weren't hitting it against each other. So I'm comfortable running with that. And I'm running another one back from yesterday. I'm going Orioles at Royals over 10. They went over yesterday as well. And I'm kind of seeing both teams probably going to the early bullpen in this one. Neither one exactly has their ace going out there. So I just got the three picks today, but hoping to keep it rolling from yesterday today. I also have the Marlins-Phillies rolling over into today to finish that game. So that'll kind of be my honorary fourth bet of the day.
Right. Yeah. And then I have the Nationals Padres rolling over. So I guess, you know, just got out of the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. You got any teams you think are going to get hot, going to cool off? Don't really know.
Right. I'm still very much acclimating myself with the, current scene in baseball right now. Starting to watch a couple games here, there, you know, I know how guys are doing, saw the All-Stars. But yeah, as our baseball expert, I'll kind of let you give our analysis. Tell me who I should be betting on for kind of these end of season, who you like, who you think might make a run at their division, who you like. From my understanding, a lot of the MVPs are all but decided, but
yeah,
unless you really think Vlad's going to go on a run, which
he could
to kill my under bet, but
he could, but I think for the most part, they are, they're pretty decided.
It is unprecedented what Shohei's doing, obviously. It's the name you're hearing all about. People have no idea how to vote for him for MVP. How do you add the war that he's adding both with his bat and on the mound? No one really knows. Obviously, war is a great stat in baseball, but pitcher war and fielder slash hitter war is not the same.
Right. It's, I don't even know how to describe what he's doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, we won't see another player that can do that for years and years and years. I mean, he should be MVP. No one else can really compete for that. I wouldn't even put money on it because I don't even know what he's at now, odds wise.
-335.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put money on it because he's the only guy I'd put money on. And, you know, what if he unfortunately gets injured or something? And
right. You could get, you can get Vlad for 250. He still has a shot to hit for the triple crown, which would be crazy if he does it and doesn't win the MVP.
Yeah, I wonder how they would like compare the two.
I think Shohei would still win it, but that would be crazy. And then with Shohei, the big name on top, and then like Vlad is the like, hey, this guy's not going to win MVP because of the unprecedented season that Shohei's having. He's like, let's still respect Vlad Guerrero. And so those are the big names on top and getting buried. Third best odds still, having an insane season with a team that's really bounced back from last year. Xander Bogaerts is putting up crazy numbers and +4,000 to win that. He's not even in the conversation, really.
Right. That's the third best odds. Wow.
Falls right off a cliff.
Yeah. I mean, it does make sense, but go ahead.
The NL is where you could sprinkle some money on MVP. I think it's DeGrom. The season he's having, especially with how other pitchers, his peers, after the spider attack, the sticky stuff, after that ban, they're going to start looking for it. People are just falling off left and right. And he's like, no, I'm just still easily the best at this. He's the easy MVP for me, but only -143.
All right.
Next, once you get into the plus money, it's Tatis, obviously. That's +115. So even not great odds for him to make up that ground. It's not even making up ground odds. They're like two completely different positions. It's just what do you value more? And then, again, it's a two-horse race. It falls off all the way to +3,000 for Nick Castellanos.
Jeez. Yeah, this year more than ever, we've kind of seen both races just being a two-man race. I mean, we're only at the All-Star break, just past it. And the books have pretty much come out and said, yeah, you're putting money on these two guys or we're just taking your money.
They've all but taken down the odds for the Cy Young in the NL, which really just shows you what how little pitching is valued in the MVP conversation. Like if a guy is like guaranteed to win, what is this, his fourth Cy Young?
Something like that, yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, he's having a historical pitching season. The team around him is finally good. Like, he'll probably win MVP. Like, that feels weird to me. But in the AL, Gerrit Cole's your leader for the Cy Young. Has a runaway with it, obviously, with he's bounced back a little bit. He had that insane performance through 127 pitches.
Right.
With really his first good outing since the sticky stuff rule changes. But the odds makers are really saying they don't think that Rodon or even Lance Lynn could even catch up to him.
I think he's like 9-2 or 10-2, Cole.
Obviously, you can't just write off the start of the season, but A couple more performances where, you know, he's just looks like a different guy out there. And it's, I don't know. But, you know, people with the baseball votes are always kind of old school. You never know how they're going to really react to a guy, especially with the kind of controversial stuff that is going on. But give me some of your either some of your division picks. Who do you like to make it to the World Series to win it? I got the odds pulled up if you want to know any of those.
So I did a little research beforehand, and I hate to say it because I'm not a fan of them. But if I'm putting money on the World Series right now, I think the Padres are plus 800.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing 750. They're going to be in that range. Yeah.
Okay. But it's just, you know, when you look at baseball teams, there's just so many ups and downs and ups and downs. And, you know, when you're trying to find a team that is just consistently good and consistently winning,
mm-hmm.
I'd say that's probably a pretty safe bet. You know, I mean, they're third in the NL West, but they're going to have three teams make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got the Giants on top at 58 and 33. You got the Dodgers at 58 and 35 and the Padres at 54 and 40.
Really crazy. Third in their division, also third in World Series odds.
Right.
Dodgers first, obviously. But then the Giants all the way down at sixth. So people not really believing in them once October comes.
Right. And I don't really either. I wouldn't even sprinkle. But no, so I guess, I mean, just to show you how consistent the Padres are here, I got some stats pulled up. I mean, so if you look at their batting stats at home, as a team, 245 average, 336 OBP, and 744 OPS. Away, 749 average, 4 points better than at home. OBP, 323, 13 points lower than at home. OPS, 741, 3 points lower.
All negligible. Like,
right.
Same team, and now essentially.
And now you run at down their stats by month. In April, they batted 237. May, they batted 240. June, they batted 243. And still early in July, but they're batting 289. It's like there was never a month with a fall off. They've just been
playing consistent baseball. That doesn't happen in baseball. There's teams always are going on runs. And it's like, you know, they have two of their last 10. But then, they strung seven together. Like,
I mean, and if you look at the OBP through the first three full months of baseball, being April, May, and June, OBP 324, 325, 325. Just playing consistent baseball. And pitching's the same thing. They really haven't had a month where there's been, you know, a fall off in ERA. If I had to put money down right now, I'd put money on consistency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the Giants are hot. I mean, you always have a team that's, you know, leading their division going into the All-Star break. And then by the end of the season, they're sitting at third in the division and missing playoffs. Like, and to me, that would be the Giants if there's a team that'll do it this year.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe they'll surprise me.
You just have to hope that consistency, you know, they're going to show up in a playoff series. But if the Dodgers also show up to their potential.
Right. So how they get beat is, you know, so the Dodgers had a month where they batted like 270. Mm-hmm. So you don't, you know, they're consistent, but they're not hitting any highs. And then, you know, you just hope they don't face the Dodgers.
Right.
In the playoffs where they're playing like they were in May when they batted 270, like as a team, which is just nuts.
Right.
But it, yeah, if I had to put money down, I would put money on consistency personally. And that, you know, plus 800, I think you're getting decent enough odds. Yeah, there,
really good odds.
With their shot. And the team to take, I'd say the AL. I genuinely think the NL's winning the World Series this year. If we're talking AL baseball, I'm probably taking the Red Sox to go.
I like that pick.
To the World Series. I don't know what their odds are to go to the World Series. I think to win, was it like plus 1400 or something?
To win, I got only plus 1,000 over here. But,
plus 1,000.
To go, let's see what their odds are on this. Plus 500.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, and that's the same thing. I mean, you look at, you know, April, May, June, 258, 261, 259. And now, remember, those numbers are inflated versus the NL, because the NL, one out of every nine at-bats is a pitcher.
Right.
Versus the AL, where you got the DH. So, like, AL teams will always have better batting averages. So, yeah, you can't just take that at face value and say, you know, oh, well, you know, the Red Sox are a way better hitting team than,
right,
than the NL teams.
But I will ask, to go off on a quick tangent, I feel like before kind of the COVID season, and with the COVID season coming and bringing along the kind of weird rules that they went with, where is the current discussion at to bring the leagues to having the same rules for the DH? I feel like I was hearing a lot about that about a year ago, and now I'm hearing very little about it.
I don't think they will. I mean, the consensus between, like, my friends that watch baseball, people I follow on Twitter, that they've kind of abandoned the DH, and our sole focus now is getting rid of the extra innings rule.
Yeah.
It made sense during COVID. Right. I was okay with it, you know, because there was a lot of doubleheaders, because, you know, a team would have to take 2 weeks off if someone tested positive.
You can't have a game going 13 innings and then
right
into a
it made sense then, but right now I don't think you need it. It's not as exciting, because now you almost expect each team to score at least one run
innings.
You know, you're starting with a guy in scoring position, two flyouts, and he scores. It's like, I don't know. That'd be my main focus. There's, you know, you hear rumblings of the whole DH coming to the NL on and off every year. I don't think it ever will.
What do you want it to?
No, I personally like the pitchers hitting.
I do too. I say take it out of the AL.
Right.
I don't,
and that'll never happen either.
No, but I'm saying, like, my ranking of what I would like, I'd first like no DH whatsoever. But after that, I would like DH in both leagues. It's just so ridiculous to me that there's just different sets of rules.
Right.
In the same league.
But I mean, I guess it can sort of play. It can play to both advantages. But I think having no DH come World Series actually benefits the NL slightly. Because when they play at the NL team, whatever team that may be, the AL can't use their DH, and their pitchers never
hit. You see it. It's like a guy gets traded over from league to league. It's like, this is his first at bat since when he was in high school in 2008.
Right.
Like,
right. And I mean, granted, most, you know, a good NL pitcher might bat like, you know, 150 at most. But it's like, that still can make a difference,
definitely,
you know, versus a guy who from the AL who goes up and is a guaranteed out. I mean, just because he's not used to having this swing at a ball going 95 plus.
It's a 7-game series. Your pitcher's going to, you know, there's going to be a decent amount of at-bats. say it goes in a 1-0, one out scenario where the pitcher's up with nobody on base. If once during that series, that pitcher hits a little blooper and gets on first, and you start with a runner on first going into the top of your lineup versus zero times for the pitchers that are just useless out there, that can decide a series. It can decide a game at the very least.
Right. I'm trying to see how old he was, but this is the reason I don't like the DH. So Bartolo Colon, just big fan of his, played in the AL. I mean, most of his career,
right.
I mean, started with the Indians back in 97, went to, the Nationals, then back to the AL with the White Sox and Angels, and then Boston, Yankees, Oakland, you know, went through, and then he came to the NL, and I don't know if you remember when he hit that home run.
Oh, but I remember.
Was like 42, 43, and like, as a fan, that's just so exciting to watch because right. It just doesn't happen.
I've heard that argument where people are like, if we go with the DH, we would never have the Bartolo Colon moment. And people are right. Like, well, it's one moment in the history of baseball. Is that really worth like keeping that rule over? Yes. I say, yes, it is.
So, and that's the thing.
Anyone to sit down, watch Bartolo Colon hit that home run for the first time and not just have a smile from ear to ear.
Right.
It's what sports is all about.
Right. And you're like, as a kid watching that and like, you know, you just are so excited. It makes you fall in love with the game.
You can't help but laugh. I've had this argument with other people that like played baseball where they say that, especially it's for the brand of baseball. Baseball is a distant third when compared to basketball and football. And it's like, well, what is like, what brings people to baseball? And it's like, well, the home runs are so exciting. We should lean in to like bring the DH in both sides, just hit more home runs, get more hits in general, just like make the game more exciting. It's the only way we can compete with the other leagues. And to that I say, if you're going for pure excitement, you'll never compete with the other leagues.
Right.
Last night, we saw NBA Finals, Game 5, coming down to the wire. Jrue Holiday gets a steal, throws a ball up in the general vicinity of the rim, and you see a 7-foot monster jump up, grab it, and bring it down with the force of Thor's hammer, and everyone right. explodes. I don't care if Shohei Ohtani hits the ball 600 feet. That'll never be more exciting than that play.
Right.
I don't care if Vlad Guerrero goes out next game and hits 4 home runs. It simply will not be more exciting than Marshawn Lynch breaking 13 tackles and running 40 yards to score a touchdown. It just can't happen. Baseball is popular, and baseball's calling card is the strategy of the game. That's what's fascinating to me. That's what I can get into, where it's like, do you pull this guy here? He's got some left in the tank, and he's very valuable to us on the mound. What is that difference between his batting ability and someone we could bring in as a pinch hitter's batting ability? And is that enough of a difference to constitute bringing in a guy to not have this guy on the mound for another inning? You have to do the quickest math, make like
right.
these on the fly decisions. It's the strategy. Oh, this guy can bunt him over. We can sacrifice here. The strategy of baseball is the beauty of the game. Home runs are cool. They're not as cool as stuff that happens in other sports, right. in my opinion.
But, you know, to your buddy's point where you said, you know, more like people want to see more home runs. Mm-hmm. That's true to a point, but it's like, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest DHs ever, Big Poppy,
right.
David Ortiz, you know, he hits a home run, nobody bats an eye,
right?
You get a pitcher with like an RBI double, or you know, just like right. puts one in a gap, it's like that is way more exciting to watch than a dude who is solely paid to hit the baseball.
I remember it with maybe the second game of the Brewers season this year. Corbin Burnes is one of those guys who had not had to take an at-bat forever. He was with the team last year, but obviously last year he didn't have to ever step up to the plate. He steps up and he just knocks a double into center. It's like, let's go, Corbin.
Right. Yeah. It is way more exciting to see a pitcher hit a baseball. You might not even see it every game, definitely, but when you do see it, it's like that. The excitement is just way higher than watching a dude who gets paid $20 million and he doesn't even have to field. His sole job is to take BP.
And what it does is it broadens the gap between the, to go Moneyball, and again, the Yankees and the A's. You have a big poppy who, despite being a crazy bat and like one of the greatest DHs of all time, as you said, who somehow, even though he'd play first base, would still be a liability out there, just cannot do anything in the field. That guy, but he can just mash dingers. Yeah, that's a guy that the Red Sox or the Yankees can afford. That's not a guy that the A's would be able to afford. Those small market teams, you can't. That's just a luxury that they can't afford to have. They need to pay for those guys who can value them on both sides of the ball. So with the DH, that just brings the divide even further from those rich teams and the poor ones.
Right. I mean, granted, the A's are in the AL.
Right.
But, you know, their DH is...
I'm saying, like, backup. If the DH were to be brought to both leagues.
Right. Their DH is, you know, probably just, like, the backup third baseman or something. And it's not some dude who's
It would still paid. Be an upgrade on the pitcher, but...
Right.
Like, that guy... Then you're also paying this guy who, like, does have some value to you in the field, but, like... We're just going to use his bat right now.
Yeah, I'm just trying to – now I'm just curious what the Oakland A's DH is even batting this year. Mm-hmm. He's batting 240.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's okay, but – Been 240 with 7 dingers, and that's it.
Right. Like, it's just a fine player. Obviously, you're not going to get those pitching numbers out of, or that hit those hitting numbers out of a pitcher. Right. But where the Yankees can go and be like, yeah, look, we're going to put Giancarlo out there in our DH, and we're going to pay him $30 million a year to do it, where, I don't know, that's half a third of the A's payroll this year. Like,
right. Yeah. I don't know. I'd prefer both leagues just rid of the DH.
Yeah. Like you said, it won't happen, but I think.
I don't think either. I think it'll stay the way it is. And like I said, I do think it benefits the NL though.
Definitely.
Come World Series time, or even, you know, regular season, you might be able to win a game or two during the regular season just because, you know, the AL team you're playing has a guaranteed out.
And it's just, I just can't get over the fact that you're going to get to the point in the season where it's time to decide a champion. Who is going to be, who won this season? Who is the greatest team? Who's going to win that prestigious trophy? And one of the teams is going to be playing with rules that they haven't played with for
both. Right.
It's like, right. what if we got to the finals here and we had Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis, who are both top three in 3-point percentage in the regular season? It's like, oh, hey, when we're in Phoenix, there's not a 3-point line. Sorry.
Or, you know, the 3-point line is like 10 feet back, or, you know, just
completely different.
Like,
or it's like, oh, we actually you play 6 guys and we can just take Brook Lopez and just leave him back on defense the whole time.
Right.
And then like, yeah, we'll just, and then we could take Bobby Portis and we'll leave him over on offense, so we'll have 4 guys just running back each time. It would be crazy. It was like no one would watch. They'd be like,
right,
this is like for the championship. Like, of course they didn't win. Like, they've never done this all year. Like, they don't right. know how to play like this. And the baseball, they're like, oh, we've done it for 700 years. We're going to keep doing it this way.
And that's why the MLB All-Star Game was the only, like, All-Star Game I had ever watched, because it meant something.
Yeah, it did. And now it's they've,
right.
they've ruined it.
Right. But, I mean, if the NL won the All-Star Game, they get that extra home game in the World right. Series, like, which is big when you Massive. Literally have rule changes between the two leagues.
Mm-hmm. And now,
you know,
and
you have
almost as egregious as making the All-Star Game worth nothing were those All-Star Game jerseys. That was like the cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could take or leave in the Pro Bowl where like each guy would have like their own helmet. It's like, oh, that's right. kind of cool. Like, you can tell what team they're on, but obviously you can't, like, they have to have jerseys. You have to know who's on your team in football. Right. Same with basketball. It doesn't matter in the MLB. Trot every guy out there in his home right. jersey. And like, let's see it. Like, it's the only high point of the season for them. Let the Pittsburgh Pirates fans see two jerseys out there.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're on the field, you either have a helmet on or you don't.
Right.
Like, it's not hard to distinguish.
Mm-hmm. And no one would have cared if the jerseys were like good, but they weren't.
Right.
They're just kind of right. ugly.
But yeah, and I mean, how about the Dinger Derby?
Yeah.
You catch that at all?
Yeah, I watched I watched like the replays of the matchups afterwards.
Yeah. Shohei getting knocked out.
He was the most tired person on the planet after that tie. He was so right. gassed. And baseball's such like a weird sport. I was like watching this. I'm like, these guys are all like out of juice. I'm like, it makes sense. Like trying to launch a baseball 400 feet 50 times in a row. Tiring, but it doesn't matter. Like, you never have to do that in baseball. Like,
right. I think the greatest stat to come out of just that entire weekend was when Pete Alonso won, and he has now made more money in the home run derby than crazy. He has from his all of his years playing baseball. He's only been in the league for like right. 3 or 4 years, but
yeah, so like the arbitration and everything. I talked about the NFL contracts and how hard some of them can be to understand last week or on Thursday. I don't even want to get into baseball. Like,
right.
Once the guy gets his 10-year deal, it can be pretty easy. But trying to decide, oh, this guy's arbitration,
yeah, I think
we control him for this many years.
I think it came out to like he's made $1.47 million mm-hmm. from it's his salary.
It's a clean million a year for the Derby, right?
And then, yep, he's made $2 million.
Of course he's winning. His livelihood depends on it.
I was wondering, you know, maybe he just quits baseball. Do you think they'd still let him participate in the Derby?
Nope, don't think so.
I mean, that'd be a pretty nice gig.
Just trades for the Derby all year.
Yeah, you go to work one day a year and you find out if you're getting paid or not.
You don't go to Mets practice and they're like, hey, Pete, can you go take some reps, like getting the stretch out and snagging those balls at first base? And he's like, no, coach, I got to practice for the Derby. I double my salary this year. Right. Get behind the net and throw me some BP. I got to feed my family.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, but I think we'll leave it at that unless you got anything else. To recap, I got Brewers today, Twins Tigers under, Orioles Royals over. By the time you hear that, those games will have played, but we'll have our Monday picks out on Twitter. Who did you have today?
I've got the I have the Rays and Braves over 9.5. I've got the Red Sox money line, the A's -2.5 home against the Indians. And then the Padres at the Nationals. I got the Nationals -1.5. And then I also have the Nationals from yesterday carrying over, hoping I can double dip. But yeah, that those games aren't looking too promising. Here.
Hopefully we can both cash an extra one from yesterday. Thanks for listening to this, our second episode of Weekly Winners. Thank you for all the support on episode one. It's more than we could have expected for the first episode of a podcast. So we appreciate everyone who listened to that one and to this one. We'll be coming at you for another episode on Thursday. Hopefully your bets all win, and we'll see you next time.